Good morning. It is indeed good to be here and to be with you here on this first day of the week at Ephesus. It's a good day, and for a few of our members, anyhow, it is a day of anniversary of their birth, and we will say happy birthday to those of you. And I will say that I want to appreciate the calls and text and the Facebook messages that I got on my birthday as well. I was greeted with a comment from a guy who said, "Well, I didn't realize it was your birthday. Happy birthday." I said, "Well, thank you." He said, "How old are you?" And I said, "Well, 31. I turned 31 today." He said, "Wow, I thought you was a lot older than that." And I said, "Well, thanks, I guess. I don't really know what he was trying to say. I guess he was trying to say what he said, which was a look older than I really was, so. Honey, I'm sorry. I'm going to try to go through something this morning with you from John chapter 7. And so if you want to turn to your Bible to John chapter 7, we'll be looking at that in just a moment. And I want to give you something as you're turning and making your way there. What we're going to look at is no new revelation. It is not anything that I just read about and had some major insight on, and I wanted to share with you. For the vast majority of you, you will leave here knowing really nothing more than what you did when you got here. But I hope that what you will leave with is encouragement, and you will leave here with the attitude of knowing that truly our God does love us, and that truly He does care about us. And truly, above all things, if you leave here with nothing else more to rejoice in, it is the fact that Jesus, in fact, is the Son of God. If you want to turn to verse 25 of John chapter 7, that's where we will begin reading in just a moment. But I want us to think about this idea. Here's a quote for you. There are two kinds of pride, both good and bad. Good pride presents itself with our dignity and self-respect. We're going to take pride in our work. We're going to do things in a way that we would not be ashamed to put our name on it. The bad type of pride is a deadly sin of superiority that reeks of conceit and arrogance. If we were to say it and put it in a term and way in which we all could understand, if I was going to paint this wall, you know, I would want to take pride in that. I would want to do a job in which I could be proud of saying that, hey, I painted that wall. And that would be the good style of pride. And where it would turn into the bad style of pride is, of course I painted that wall. Do you think anybody could do as good of a job as I do? Look at what, I mean, you can tell that I painted that wall. Those are the two different types of pride. And we're going to look at some people within Scripture as we read this, and we'll be able to see their type of pride versus the type of pride that maybe we should have as we look at John chapter 7 and verse 25. Some of the people of Jerusalem therefore said, Is not this the man who they seek to kill? And here he is speaking openly, and they say nothing to him. Can it be that the authorities really know that this is the Christ? So as Jesus is professing there, and he is speaking, even those of the audience, they're hearing him, and they said, is this not the guy that everybody's been trying to kill? Remember, they wanted to kill him because he had the audacity, if you will, to heal on the Sabbath day and to tell the guy, you can pick up your bed and walk. And here he is, he's healing on the Sabbath day. What kind of man is this? And so from that point on, because he told that man to violate the Sabbath, and he himself also violated the Sabbath by working, by performing a miracle on the Sabbath day, they thought, this is blasphemy. This man thinks he is equal to God. We're going to put him to death. And so those of the population, those of the number, they say, is this not the man that everybody's been trying to kill? And here he is. They've been trying to find him, but here he is. He's just openly in the marketplace just speaking away. Here he is in the temple just speaking away and talking openly, and no one is saying anything to him. They're not trying to tell him to stop. They're not trying. Maybe what it is deep down inside, they all know he's the Messiah, and they want to get rid of him because he's the Messiah. It is a bunch of introductory to Conspiracy Theory 101, isn't it? I mean, that's exactly what's going on. Is maybe they know something that we don't know, and maybe we ought to know it, and maybe they're trying to keep it from us because they don't want us to know it. Verse 27 says, but we know where this man comes from. And when the Christ appears, no one will know where he comes from. So Jesus proclaimed as he taught in the temple, you know me and you know where I come from. But I have not come of my own accord. He who sent me is true, and him you do not know. Well, obviously the people were speaking of Jesus, the Christ. They were saying, we know where this man comes from. They were talking about physically generated. We know where he came from. He's the carpenter from Galilee's son. Has anything good came out of Galilee? Is there anything that is commendable that comes from Galilee? He is Jesus of Nazareth. He can't be the Christ. When the Christ appears, you said they had it all dreamed up in their mind. It was going to be some spectacular event and moment, and nobody's going to know where he comes from. He's just going to appear before us and amongst us, and he's going to be here in our presence, and we're going to be just in awe and at all of his glory. This guy, he's just like one of us. And Jesus said, you know me, you know where I come from. But what you don't know is who sent me here and sent me to the place of which I came from. And we're going to see what he meant by that, how they do not know him, in just a moment. Jesus continues in verse 29, I know him, for I come from him, and he sent me. So they were seeking to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him because his hour had not yet come. Yet many of the people believed in him, and they said, when the Christ appears, will he do more signs than this man has done? Will the Christ be able to do more than this guy's done? We've seen him. You know, he's taken the lame that we know that is just a quadriplegic all of his life. He's taken the deaf that we've known has been deaf all of his life, the blind who has been blind all of his life, and he's made them see and those hear and taken up their bed and walk. Would the Christ be able to do more than this man? Will there be more signs and wonders with the Christ than what this man has done? The Pharisees heard the crowd muttering these things about him. The Pharisees, the ones who had tried to come together to say that we need to kill him, because he is equating himself out to be the Son of God, and God sent him, and he's making himself thus even with God. And so the Pharisees, the ones who wanted to kill him, they now hear the crowd muttering and questioning all of the things that Jesus is saying and questioning, maybe even the Pharisees themselves saying, you know, well, maybe they know that he really is the Christ. Verse 33, and the Pharisees heard the muttering these things about him, and the chief priests and Pharisees sent officers to arrest him. And Jesus then said, I will be with you a little longer. And then I am going to him who sent me. And you will seek me, and you will not find me. Where I am, you cannot come. And then verse 35 and 36, it says this. The Jews said to one another, where does this man intend to go that we will not find him? Does he intend to go to the dispersion among the Greeks and teach the Greeks? What does he mean by saying, you will seek me and you will not find me? And where I am, you cannot come. So Jesus hits these Pharisees and the chief priests and all of those in the audience with a little bit of truth and says, I'm only going to be here a little bit longer. In the previous verses, he says, you know, they were going to go arrest him, but his hour had not yet come. Jesus knew his hour had not yet come, but he knew his hour was still at hand. It's coming up real soon. He says, I'm going to be with you just a little while longer. But where I'm going, you can't go. And you do not know where I'm going. And so they thought, well, where is he going to go? Is he trying to say he's going to go out of our jurisdiction? Is that what he's attempting to say? That, or is he saying that he's going to go up into the mountains and hide? Or is he going to go amongst the Greeks and the dispersion of the Jews that are living not here in Jerusalem, not here in Galilee? He's going off to go with those Jews and he's going to teach them and speak to them. And then he's going to go and teach the Greeks too. Is that what he's trying to tell us? And we all understand what's going on. He's saying that I'm going to go away. And when I go away, I'm going home. I'm going back to the one who sent me. I'm going to die. I will be raised in 3 days and then I'm going back home to him who sent me. Well, do you know Jesus? Do you know the Messiah? Do you know Christ? And as I mentioned before, thus far, I really haven't, probably for the majority of you, told you anything that you didn't already know. That this has just been something that you've known as a believer and you've understood and you can grasp that the one who sent Jesus is God. And while on earth, many people did not understand that and they did not perceive that. But how many of us walk around like some of these Pharisees with our attitude and with our pride and with our just feelings ruling us over the things that we know about God? And do we really truly know God? Do we truly know Jesus and what He wants us to do and how He wants us to live our lives? Well, I ask this question, is there proof that they do not know Him? Well, they want to arrest the Messiah. They wanted to arrest Jesus, the one who claimed to be the Messiah. And the Pharisees heard the crowd muttering these things about Him, and the chief priests and Pharisees sent officers to arrest Him. We all have different people that we know who, they have certain gifts. They have certain gifts, they have certain things that they are handy at, and certain talents, and certain spiritual gifts that they're able to have. And I know a guy who oftentimes, his claim to it was, my spiritual gift is that I'm teaching people a bad example of what not to do in their life. And they may hopefully that through my life they can see all the mistakes that I've made and just know I don't need to do those things. And so... We oftentimes see people like that, or maybe even it's the thing that we can relate to. There are certainly stories in the Bible where the point we're to get out of seeing behavior that we should try to avoid. But let's look at what these religious leaders did and how they were a bad example and how we should not try to emulate them or act like them or have their behavior, but rather we should avoid that type of behavior. How would you like it when someone tells you that you don't know what you're talking about? Do we appreciate it when somebody asks us, say, well, you don't even know what you're talking about? We don't like that. We don't. Well, as a matter of fact, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what I know. You know, that's maybe the line we give them, that you don't understand that. Well, the fact is that the religious leaders should have listened, but they couldn't listen because of the hardness of their hearts. You know, they thought that they knew what they were talking about, and Jesus said, well, you don't know what you're talking about at all. You don't even begin to know what you're talking about. You don't know anything about me. In John chapter 7, verse 28, it says, you both know me, and you know where I'm from, and I have not come by myself, but he who sent me is true, whom you know. You think you know me, but you don't know me. You don't know who sent me. Well, how did they get in that state? Well, they were spurred by the crowd's questions. You know, maybe it was the fact that some of the crowd's questions were, you know, that was, oh yeah, let's ask him that question. That was on our side. But maybe the questions were beginning to get in such a way to where these people are starting to believe that this is Jesus the Messiah. Well, when the Christ comes, will He do any more wonders than this man? Well, they couldn't. We're not going to let you ask that question. Almost seems like some of the interviews that we have today, well, we'll use this question, we'll use that question, because we can answer those without, you know, indicting ourselves. The Pharisees wanted to control the questions. Well, here's some of the questions. Why aren't the religious leaders doing something about Jesus? Why is it that they're speaking up about Jesus? And I ask myself the same question of why didn't they stood up a lot, but if we think back to John chapter 3, who was it that came to Jesus in the cover of darkness? Well, it was Nicodemus. What was Nicodemus? Well, he was a Pharisee. Maybe these Pharisees, some of them, while they were arrogant and puffed up, there were still some who genuinely sought to do God's will, who felt the responsibility it was to lead God's people. And maybe some of them were still trying to hold back in their hearts and with their companions and with their other members of the board, if you will, and say, well, maybe there's something to this, Jesus. Verse 31, isn't Jesus the Messiah if He's doing all these wonderful miracles? I mean, how could you doubt that Jesus would be the Messiah? Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus of Galilee. How would you doubt that He is the Messiah if He's doing all these great and wonderful things? No one else could do these things. In verse 32, the leaders heard the whispered questions and it spurs them to send soldiers. Well, this thing's getting out of hand. We need to arrest Him and we need to do it now. You know, we were kind of being patient till we had more evidence where we could surely convict Him to death. But this is getting out of hand, so let's just get Him on what we can get Him on. And let's bring Him in for questioning and see if we can get Him to maybe tell on Himself a little bit. You see, they were spurred by the crowd's faith into action. It says in verse 31, but many of the people believed in Him. Now, why was that a problem for the Pharisees? Well, I don't know that I can answer that question in its entirety. It causes for a lot of speculation. But I think by the preachings and teachings of Jesus, and by the action of the Pharisees and those chief priests and the lawyers of the day, they had a lot of power. And when Jesus came and said things like what Evan read from in Matthew chapter 5, blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek, blessed, they were the ones that were supposed to be blessed. Because of their authority, because of their power, because of their dignity, because of their big flowing robes and because of their big hats and all of their apparel that they wore and their little box of secret scripture and the smoke which would follow them and the trumpets that would play when they would do something great and marvelous. You see, they had all of that, and here is Jesus saying, you, the widow, is blessed. You, the deaf, you are blessed. You who are humble are blessed. Not unlike all of these. Well, they were going to lose all of their authority. They were going to lose all their power. And here are all of these people in this crowd starting to believe that what He was saying, that He was truly sent from God, that just quite didn't sit well with them. So, what it all boils down to is they had this ignorant confidence in themselves. That's why they ended up in the situation they were in. They thought themselves to be something when they were nothing. In John chapter 7, verse 25 through 27, we can kind of see, you know, they were smart enough not to debate Him. It seemed to be like, well, we're not ready for what He's got. They felt like Jesus had Google or something, you know, in His little tablet, and He was answering all their questions. How He was able to just spit back Scripture to them as they would question Him and try to lay these traps for Him. They didn't want to enter into a debate with Jesus. They knew Jesus was from Galilee, and that alone disqualified Him from being the Messiah, because can anything good come from Galilee? You see, their ignorant confidence. They didn't know how the Messiah would show up. They didn't know. They were expecting, as we mentioned before, some great and glorious thing. They were expecting a king. A present day, modern day, rule on this earth king. They were looking for someone with lineage and heritage. And they got it. They were just too ignorant to see it. Verse 35, they didn't understand the idea of Christ's death and resurrection. Where does this man intend to go that we cannot find him? They didn't comprehend that the Gentiles would be offered salvation. That why would he come to save these Gentiles and these Greeks? And they didn't understand his divinity. They didn't understand that he intended to go back to his, in fact, Father. Ignorant confidence puffed them up to turning a blind eye toward the Messiah. These are all just simply basic principles that we as believers maybe sometimes take for granted. Where does he intend to go that we cannot find him? Well, you can't find a man in the grave. And then when they seek to find him in the grave, where was he? He was not there. For lo, he is risen. The message of the gospel is offered to the Jew first and then also to the Greek. And me not knowing the entirety of my family heritage, I am truly grateful for that. Because the best of my knowledge, I cannot gather back to the 12 tribes that I would have needed to come from. They didn't understand that he as the Son of God was part of God, and the words that he spoke were just as if God had spoke them here on this earth. Because, see, when God had spoke before, it was maybe to Elijah on the mountain as a whisper, or Moses would go up on top of the mountain and he would come down with some great revelation, and up on that mountain they could hear the thundering and the power that would come from it. And here is Jesus speaking just as they do. See, it's not what they were expecting. Sometimes we get so close to God with our mouth, but yet our heart is so far away. I think that's where many of these Pharisees were. In Matthew chapter 15, verse 18, it says, "They draw near to me with their mouth, but their heart is far from me." Why is this so great and marvelous? Well, because when he said that he came into the world to seek and save the lost, he meant everyone. So, if you're able to, raise your hand if you're part of that everyone that's here today. Are you anyone? Are you a one that's here today? Okay, y'all. Some of y'all didn't commit. So either you need shoulder surgery, which I understand, or you don't understand what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying is, are you in this world today and have an opportunity to be saved by Jesus? Raise your hand. Okay, now that looked like everyone. Okay. What about people that aren't in this building? Are they part of that group? Yeah. What about people that are yet to come? I'm part of that. So do we act like Pharisees sometimes in the fact that we only worry about the people in this building? And we don't worry about anybody else? Because I know so much about all this Bible and Jesus stuff, and nobody else out there can know anything. But yet we don't try to share it with them. We don't try to learn from them. We don't try to grow. What can we learn from them? Religious arrogance is a killer. We have got to humble ourselves. That's what killed the Pharisees. And we cannot be like the Pharisees and be so full of ourselves. And we take pride in knowing the Bible. And that is good. And that is something that we should take pride in learning and studying the Scriptures every day. But we should not be so proud that we know everything about the Bible. You don't know nothing. We just barely even grasp the top of the pages. Luke chapter 14, verse 11, "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Humility is essential. And we need to humble ourselves at the feet of Jesus. And there is no greater place for us to humble ourselves than at the feet of Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. And one of the biggest failings of the American church, and the church that is residing in America today, the part of the body of Christ that is within America today, is that we think we know it all. We need to admit our uncertainties. We need to talk about our shortcomings. We need to get this out in the open. This isn't throwing away our faith. We just need to acknowledge who we really are so that we can really help one another get to heaven. So that we can see where He is now, where He is waiting on us. Sometimes we mess up. Sometimes we need help when we mess up. Sometimes we need to talk to others. Sometimes we don't. We just Haley and Jensen and Diane and Tracy. They all did a little panel board for the OWL, and it's Older Women Likewise. It's an acronym. I learned that Thursday night. And they talked about some of the things, and I think it was Jensen that made the comment, when we talk to others, sometimes we need to use a whisper, and that's all it takes. You know, we just speak real softly to them, and some people need to get hit over the head with a frying pan to get their attention, and getting hit over the head with a frying pan, just, you know, it's just like, well, okay, yeah. It's no big deal to them. But if you come in too aggressively with some people, they get offended. If you come in too soft with some people, they never get the message. And so, what am I trying to get at here? Here's what I'm trying to get at. One of the things at which I have thought oftentimes, and I've heard Brother Vernon speak about it as well, is the virtual service. And I'm appreciative of it. It's good. It helps many. But here's the thing about it. And we oftentimes say, well, you just can't worship the same at home. And, here's why I say that. It's because I can't. Now, I don't say that to pass judgment on you and your abilities to worship God and your abilities to worship God at home. I'm just saying here's one of the shortcomings of Matt. When he's at home and he's watching it online, And it's even harder on me than it is on you, possibly, potentially, because I've done spoke it once, and Eric's done heard it once, and Robert's done heard it once, and then we mailed it out on the internet at a later time, and it was just kind of like, well, I've already heard all this, and I'd lean over to Haley and be like, hey, guess what? I can tell you what he's going to say next, like I was some kind of psychic or something. And it wasn't so much that, it was just that, and that whole time there I was supposed to be worshiping with my brethren. And I couldn't. I didn't. And so maybe that, I just want to give you kind of that insight as to that's one of the things that I struggle with, that I have a hard time with. And I don't know your strengths and your weaknesses. I just know it's one of my weaknesses. And I want to encourage you that maybe if it's one of your weaknesses that you'll be encouraged to come too. Whenever we have these uncertainties or we have these shortcomings, we need to talk about it. Because while I may not be able to help you, there is someone here that will be able to help you. And we can't help you if we don't know. And I can't be helped by you if I don't tell you my problems. It's almost as if God knew what He was talking about when He said, lifting up one another, carrying and tarrying with one another, encouraging one another, all the more as you see the day approaching. Well, the day's approaching. And are you ready? We have to make sure that we don't have too much pride, that we don't have too much power, that we don't have too much position like these Pharisees, that we're unafraid to ask for help, that we're so blind that we can't even see the Messiah before. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, we would love for you to leave here being one. And perhaps it is the fact that you know all of the right things to do. You've been to all of the right places. You understand and you followed. You just haven't done it. Well, this morning is the greatest time ever because it is the morning and the moment that you have to become a child of God. And we would love to leave here rejoicing for one more reason, and that is that one more lost soul has been saved. If you're here this morning and you need the encouragement of the church, you need some prayers on your behalf, we would love to help you. Whatever your need may be, come as we stand, as we sing.